One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and we're broadcasting from a new studio in East London that's just big enough to squeeze in some of the biggest minds in football. And not just those, but Rory Smith as well. Which is lucky, because as most of football's greatest thinkers are here with me now, a big welcome to Matt Hughes, who's not actually here, but broadcasting from his secret posh location in southwest London. But I'm delighted to be joined by Joe Tung, my old boss, and the producer and editor of 606 on 5 Live. Oh, and of course, Rory Smith is here too. Later, we'll be discussing the impact of the Women in Football documentary that I'm sure many of you saw. But first, let's start with the title race. Okay, well, let's actually start with the title race rather than the game. Let's have just a very quick whip round. Is the title race over? Rory?
Yes.
Matt?
Definitely.
Joe?
Done and dusted.
Right, I beg to dissent. I've seen stranger things happen. I remember Mancini's Lazio throwing away an 8-point lead in the final 7 games back. Of course, they were managed by one Sven-Göran Eriksson. So, I don't know. I don't think United are playing particularly well. So there. But anyway, on to the game. Arsenal and City, a horrid tackle early on. I don't think anybody wants to go and defend the tackle. What I'm curious about is, we're going to get into referees because they had absolute stinkers this weekend. But where was the assistant referee? I mean, supposedly the official was unsided, but did he not see that?
You'd have thought he should have done. It was sort of in his jurisdiction, but linesmen haven't had a great weekend either. Just the offside decisions at Chelsea were, to be honest, more the linesman's fault than the referees.
I think Mark Hughes got it spot on, because after the game, he came out and said, who's going to stand up in front of 75,000 people and stick their flag up and go against the grain when the ref's already made a decision? So I think that kind of just put it out there how little power the linos have nowadays.
Well, I would have thought, actually, Arsenal being the home team and sending off, and you as an assistant referee sending off a visiting player, you might actually get a lot of support, and it wouldn't be that hard to do, especially when you're a professional and this is your job.
But across the weekend, if you're looking at decisions Lino's made across the weekend at Old Trafford,
we're not there yet.
Okay, I'm just moving on.
The one thing I would say is that the amount of times you see a referee give a throw-in, say, before the linesman does. The linesman's flag very rarely goes up before the referee makes a decision, and it suggests to me that linesmen generally sort of hide behind the referee.
QZ, I know you linesmen don't rank very high on your list of priorities, but is there some major issue, or did they just have a bad weekend?
I think the issue here is communication, and they're trying to build, particularly in European football, I think they're trying to build these sort of teams of linesmen and referees working together. But I think they should do that more often, and I think referees should make more of a point of consulting their assistants on a regular basis, and that in that way they might actually contribute rather than just having to make a decision reluctantly at the last minute.
Well, let's stay with you, just because I saw the Arsenal lineup, and I saw our old pal Yossi Benayoun, and I saw Thomas Rosicki, who I thought had basically figuratively retired from football. But Rzyzinski actually was very good, as he has been in a number of these late games in the season. And Ben Ayoun kind of did his thing too. Well, what gives there, Hughesy? What's the thinking?
Rzyzinski's been outstanding for about 2 months now, since they beat Spurs in that incredible game a couple of months ago. Ben Ayoun also played very well. Wenger says it's the fact that he's fit and 100% well for the first time in a long time that has made the difference to Rzyzinski, and he's really stepped up, and he's obviously not Cesc Fabregas, but he's the closest they've found this season, and I think he's been a great player for Arsenal recently. It's just frustrating that he hasn't been able to do it more often in the 6 years he's been at the club.
I think it's no surprise that Wenger says that it's the fitness. To me, it's playing him in the position that he's meant to play in. Like Arshavin, he's played him as a winger for 3 years, and it's not worked. But that's just Rzyzinski, like Arshavin, isn't a winger. You play him in central midfield in that attacking sort of role in the hole, and he does well, because that's where he's meant to play.
Bad. But if I'm looking at it from the outside, Ben Ayoun's on loan. Rzyzinski's old, and why not play the kids at this stage? I mean, obviously they want to finish third, but once they knew that Spurs had lost and stuff, I mean, or is it something that they should be doing going forward, seeing, you know, throwing up more of the Ox and people like that, people actually have a future at the club?
If the players are delivering, why change the formula? If Rzyzinski's been delivering for two months and Ben Ayoun's obviously playing well, why change that?
Because the point isn't just to win meaningless games now, the point is to...
Well, the point's to get third now, surely.
Third,
I agree with Joe. I think that they've done.
You guys are so scared by the Champions League prelims.
I'm scared by the fact that you're using the Ox as though it's a proper nickname for someone. Is it him and the Ram for Ramsey? Does that work as well? And the Wall for Theo Walcott.
You obviously spend a lot less time on Arsenal message boards than I do. I'm a big gooner, as you know. All right, let's talk about Balotelli. Now, Ollie Kay, our fearless leader, one of them, I guess, made the point that he's bored with Balotelli. Somebody else came out and said, you know what, this has been such a horrible Premier League season. This has been, and one of the few interesting things this year is, you know, to liven things up. Joe, you're nodding. Are you nodding in agreement with Ollie?
I'm a huge Balotelli fan. I fear for the next 6 weeks without having Balotelli to look forward to watching. what's the point in watching Match of the Day if there's no Balotelli to tune in for? What's his next antic? And it's not just about his off the pitch antics. I genuinely like watching him. You know, I was at the Etihad when for this Man City Spurs game when he stamped on Scott Parker, but then won the penalty and just stepped up as if, you know, not a care in the world and took the points. And I just literally thought, that man is what we need in the Premier League. What are we going to do next season if we don't have Balotelli? Who are you going to tune in to watch? What genius is there?
You'll have to make do with Wayne Rooney and Robin van Persie. I mean, well, actually, maybe not van Persie. We'll see about that one.
You'll have Arsene Wenger's footballing menagerie. That's what you'll have to watch.
Matt, I was intrigued. I mean, I'm assuming you're not bored with Balotelli, or if you are, it's because you often sound relatively bored by most things. But and I say that as a compliment. But I was curious about Mancini's post-match reaction, because, you know, maybe he was being brutally honest, but to come out and say, and you know, in 2-3 years' time, his career will be over if he continues like this. He's not going to play again this year, and you know, I think the club will probably sell him in the summer. Is this a man at the end of his tether, or is he trying to play yet another psychological mind game with Super Mario?
I think the point being is that Mancini himself is bored of Balotelli, and he's used words like I've finished with words for him, and he's basically said he's at his wit's end, which is admirably honest and refreshing from one point of view, but the other is it's not as simple as that, and he's already tried to finish the career of one high-profile striker this year, and it hasn't worked. Who's to say that he can get the money he wants for Balotelli in the summer now? So I think he's playing a pretty dangerous game, Mancini, by being so honest. I don't know, the mind games. I think he's saying that anything. He's being a bit naive.
I think that was a bit of a deflective tactic, though, at the end. I mean, Balotelli didn't lose the game for them yesterday. He didn't get sent off till, what was it, 83rd minute?
Later than that, I think. 86, yeah.
Right, exactly. So he didn't actually lose the game at the Emirates yesterday.
But it's a good way to sort of deflect the fact that
it's
City
a great, but that's what I'm saying.
Horrid,
why are we discussing a 23-year-old is to blame for City throwing away the title?
There's a phone.
He didn't lose the game, but I mean, if City had had a more reliable presence up front, then they would have competed a lot more. And the way he played was indicative of sort of City's whole sort of sloppy, half-hearted performance.
Hughesy, I have an idea. If only Mancini had a big, tall, strong, powerful striker that he could send up against Thomas Vermaelen, who's a bit of a shrimp, and Koscielny, who's French, then maybe they could have powered their way in there, maybe. But if only he doesn't have somebody like, say, Ndjeko available, right? Does
They didn't spend £27 million on him a couple of years ago, just as they didn't spend £47 million on Tevez. And, you know, they need some more players. As in the interview he gave in the Sundays yesterday, he needs more money.
What's funny about Dzeko is his goals-to-minutes ratio this season is actually very good, as is Balotelli's. Now, Roy, you're on the record as saying you don't think Balotelli's that talented a footballer.
No, I didn't say...
aside all the lunacy.
You and your hyperbole, Dab, I didn't say that. I don't... The idea with Balotelli is that he is a lot of trouble, but he's sort of worth it because of what he provides you on the pitch.
He could be worth it one day. The idea.
I don't see what he provides you on the pitch that you can't get elsewhere. He's a fine footballer, obviously, but I'm not surprised Mancini's at his wit's end with him, to be honest. I just don't get what he does that's so special. And to me...
Sorry, you keep going back to what he does. The idea is it's what he could do if he harnesses the potential.
But he's 22. He's not 17 anymore. You know, he's 22. This is when footballers reach their sort of... especially attackers begin to reach their peak. And he's so in and out. He's so unreliable. And as Mancini said yesterday, you're not even sure if he's going to finish the game. His tackle on Son, followed by his display, which was sort of not inept, but it was just lazy and slapdash, is a complete and utter abdication of responsibility. I don't think he's worth the trouble.
Okay, so where's the captain pulling him up after that first challenge and going, watch yourself?
Oh, no, I think that's right. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that Balotelli's cost City the title. I don't buy that whatsoever. I think if anyone's cost City the title, it's Mancini, who lost his bottle after QPR away and hasn't played the attacking football that City were playing at the start of the season for about 4 months. They've scored 5 goals in 5 months away from home. That's what's cost them the title, not Balotelli. But there has to be a degree of personal responsibility as well.
But it's also a team. I didn't see any balls coming in from wide from him. It was literally all down the middle. What's he meant to do with that? Where's it? You know, we're talking about support, and I mean playing support and mental support. You've got no playing support. You've got no midfield supporting him. But actually, where's the captain coming up to him and going, mate, you know, just... slow yourself down for a little bit. Watch yourself.
I think, as Hughesy would probably say yesterday, it looked a bit like the City players have run out of patience with Balotelli. I think they've run out. They can't be bothered trying to get him back on the right track anymore.
Joe Hart, prime example, when he got sent off.
Maybe Joe Hart was just angry that he got sent off, and they knew they were going to lose the game at that point, rather than, you know, all this invective. But of course, we love to read minds and do the whole body language thing. But let's talk Mancini. You seem like you've got something to say there, young Rory. The script is laid out by certain people as Jose Mourinho, you know, is still annoying everybody in Madrid, and being all coy about him leaving, and the obvious place for him to go would be Manchester City at this stage. Now, that's obviously one scenario, but taking a step back, would it make sense for City to move on from Mancini?
Not yet, I don't think. I think that, as he said yesterday, they've developed this season. They have progressed. It's a shame they're sort of jettisoning the title and such.
They have 15 more points this season than they did last season.
And they have been genuine title contenders, which it would be difficult to say they were last year. So, no, I think he warrants another season. The big question is whether he's learnt enough from this season to repeat.
Now, because people always, we always talk about, like, oh, well, he deserves to stay. He deserves to go. And so I think the deserves, even if you think Mancini's done a good job, is Mourinho sexy and appealing enough? If the opportunity arises to get Mourinho and say goodbye for Mancini, would you pull the trigger on it? Should City pull the trigger on that?
I would leave Mancini for another year. I mean, I think...
Even if Mourinho were available?
Mourinho should go to send him down to a certain North London club. I think there'll be a job down there for him. I don't think Mourinho's going to do... What will Mourinho do differently than Mancini's done this season? I mean, that would be my initial...
All right.
Query on that.
Matt, there isn't enough Mourinho worship right now. Please, Matt, fix it.
Well, the risk of being predictable, and I'm not actually a Mourinho fan, but I would be astounded if Mourinho wouldn't have won the league with that squad of players. he would have got them all fighting for each other, believing in each other, and they would have secured more points. Mourinho talks a lot of nonsense, as we all know, but one of his most apposite pronouncements, I think, is what he said at Chelsea, which was, the biggest line football is you can't have success in your first season. And I think that's right. I think if you've got the players, and you've got the money, and you've got the structure, you should win titles. So being 15 points better off in a league that has been, by common consent, of a much poorer quality than in recent years, where the probable champions, United, are pretty average, City should have won this championship, and for them not to do so is a failure, and responsibility ultimately rests with Mancini.
But having said that, Mourinho is currently overseeing a Real Madrid team that are chucking away a 10-point lead at the top of the Spanish First Division, so maybe he's just as bad a manager as Mancini.
And he won so much last season, of course,
exactly.
With Real Madrid.
They are up against the best team in the world, and maybe ever, and most of his players hate him, and they're still top of the league.
But United's run of form in the last 3 months has been absolutely insane. I think they've got 11 wins out of 12. I don't think Barcelona can match that.
Well, you talk about United, that provides us with a very nice segue onto United. I want to talk about the United's run of form, though, first, because you mentioned these wins and so on. I try to look at the performances as well, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, so yesterday they get the gift that keeps on giving in Lee Mason. They get the week before that, they're playing Blackburn, and it takes them until, the last 10 minutes to score. And by the way, this is not a very good Blackburn side, as we saw this weekend again. And the week before that, it's Fulham at home, Fulham, where they've all booked their holidays. And they only win 1-0, and there's that late penalty decision, which probably should have been given, but wasn't given. Are you impressed with this, Joe? Is this the brilliant form that Rory K. Smith is talking about?
It's not brilliant form, but it's 3 points every week. And that's the difference, isn't it?
Is this just something we say when we can't explain it? Like, should we? I'm always torn by the results or the performance. I look at this. I don't see a United side that's playing well. And so I think to myself, oh, well, then maybe next week they can lose. Or should I be thinking, look, they're playing badly and they're still winning. If they just play to their level, then they'll win even more next week. Which is the correct answer, O Jedi Master?
Well, it's a sort of glass half full, half empty scenario, but usually for me, I'm going to say it's half full. You've got to admire their results. You say they're not playing well, but ultimately they're winning. And what would any other team in the league to give for those results? City's last few results have been draws against Sunderland, Stoke, and a defeat at Arsenal, which is why they're not champions. To win 11 out of 12 games at any point of the year is remarkable, particularly at the end of the season. I think the true quality is revealed by the European performances, which have been very good, but to dominate at home as they have is still pretty impressive, and we should be praising them, really, not burying them.
Just as a country gets the government it deserves, which obviously Britain has with Tories who sort of prompt fuel strikes and what have you, a football league gets the champions it deserves. This is a Premier League that's not as good as it used to be, and neither are Manchester United. But
it's a bit harsh and depressing.
They're still much better than everybody else, and I think Hughes is absolutely spot on. They were taken apart by Bilbao in Europe. Ajax probably should have put them out the previous round. Bale, who got beaten 7-0 by Munich, knocked them out of the Champions League. Benfica.
Basel. What? It's heißt Basel, nicht Bale.
Well, don't speak your heathen tongues at me, Marcotti. And
Baal is like the evil false god from the Bible. That's Baal.
I think that's a misunderstanding of ancient theology, Gab, to be honest. But anyway, they aren't as good as they used to be, but as Hughesy says, they have produced this incredible run of form. And the person who has to take credit for that is Ferguson. This is the worst Manchester United side to win a title, but this is his best title.
It's funny because I said the same thing about last year's team. This is the worst Manchester United side to win the title. And I think what we can say about him is that, and he's so easy to forget, is I think it's something like more than half of United's most used players in terms of minutes this season arrived in the last 2 years. This is a team that's transitioning, and teams that transition are supposed to be worse because they're transitioning. But the dude still wins, which goes back to why I think he's the greatest.
What I would say about your sort of existential dilemma about whether the results or the performances are most important, I think it is the mark of champions to win when you're playing badly, but it's not the mark of a long-term successful side to keep on playing badly and still win. I think at some point you do have to play well, otherwise you will get found out.
Well, or the other thing you can do is have Lee Mason and his official. And I want to break this down because there's tough offside calls. This is a very obvious one. The linesman's very well placed. Maybe the guy had a brain fart at the moment, maybe he made a mistake. But it's so obvious that Ashley Young dives, and that's on Mason. Because Sean Derry's arm is outstretched, but his arm is already outstretched when it touches Ashley Young. So it's not like he's pushing him. This guy's done this before. We have the character assassination of Balotelli. I think this guy's not good. I don't think he's good enough for United. I just don't like this. This is pure cheating.
Well,
and
take this off Ashley Young. My whole issue with this is, when was the last time you saw someone touched in the box and a penalty wasn't given? When did the penalty area become a non-contact area? That's my whole issue with it. Lee Mason had his whistle in his mouth before Ashley Young had practically hit the floor. He was giving that penalty the minute Derry was next to him. It wasn't about where he touched him or how he touched him. He didn't even look across, you know, he's not even looking at his assistant for any sort of support. He's giving that penalty. That's my whole issue with it.
Does Joe's words sound as harsh to you as they sound to me, Matt?
No, I don't think so. I think he's spot on, really. I mean, it's embarrassing when mistakes are shown up so soon after the event on TV. And what referees in this instance should do is come out and explain themselves. I think they'd have a lot more sympathy if they had a voice, and we could sort of sympathise with them as human beings.
I think the problem with that
instead of hiding behind them.
How do you explain that? I mean, what is going through his mind?
I made a mistake. I saw it incorrectly. I made a mistake. You know, I mean,
is that what you think happened? Do you think he thought there was a lot more contact than there was, or do you think he just thought there's a bit of contact in the box, I've got to give a penalty?
Or do you think he guessed?
Well, right. Well, that's where the problem is if you're guessing.
Well, I mean, he still has to make a decision even if he's guessing, right? So he says, I saw it incorrectly. I judged it a certain way. And, you know, Ashley Young didn't help me because he throws himself to the ground like a wuss. And Sean Derry probably would have been better if he hadn't been...
So who are you blaming more? Are you blaming Ashley Young or are you blaming Lee Mason?
Well, I'm blaming Lee Mason more because I kind of accept the fact, and we've seen it this season, that footballers are trying to con referees more and more. And
as they should, as their job.
That is a very...
Their job is to get the ball and go through and goal.
Their job is to win football matches.
Yeah.
And if you can gain an advantage by whatever means, as long as it doesn't involve hurting anybody, then to be honest, for me, it's absolutely fine. Ashley Young, fine.
Paying off opponents, that's fine too, because it doesn't hurt anybody, right?
It doesn't hurt anybody at all.
No, exactly.
You know, stop being hyperbolic.
I can point out, this is like Rory Smith's like Latin American extraction. This is a very popular argument, and Rory knows this, and where they say, well, what's the difference between, you know, basically a player, you know, showing one way and cutting the other way to deceive the opponent and beat him, and a player deceiving the referee. It's based on this ethos that the referee is an opponent to be conned, just like the opposition players, right?
Broadly speaking, you're trying to make me shy away from the argument by saying it's popular, as though I'm trying to be counterintuitive. I'm not. I just think that they haven't. It's their duty to win football matches, and if you have to sort of take a tumble,
I think their duty is to stay on their feet and run through and go with.
But is it a winner's duty just to stay on the wide right in his little channel,
yeah,
like it was in the 50s.
If you're hacked down in the box, you can't stay on your feet.
Matt,
so you will get the penalty.
Can I just say one thing about
sure.
about referees generally? When I was a kid and I was playing football, when I never dived, I can assure you, not only was I taught that if you lost control of the ball, it wasn't a penalty, no matter. You could be shot, and if you'd lost control of the ball, it wasn't a penalty because you weren't going to score. I was also taught the referees had to be absolutely certain that there was contact.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
That there was a foul before they gave the penalty. That's the bit that's been lost.
In the incident yesterday, I'm not absolutely certain there's no contact at first glance. Yeah. I mean, obviously, with the replays, we know there was no contact, so you're not absolutely certain. But I'm also not absolutely certain that Ashley Young was clean through on goal, because he's not going there straight on goal. He's actually going across to the left.
Their whistle happening. And they're guessing.
Is there an argument to be made that a footballer's job is actually, since he's in the entertainment business, to actually do what's best for the product of football, and therefore cheating and diving and being James Perch aren't good for the image of football?
But and Gab, to use terminology that you might appreciate, do you not need faces and heels? Is there not a balance to be struck between the light and the dark?
Yeah, but I think the difference, and you are making an allusion to my favorite sport, which is or my favorite form of sports entertainment, which is of course professional wrestling, which does have faces or good guys and heels or bad guys. That's an entirely different narrative. And the other thing is, I'm not sure you're aware of this, Rory, but professional wrestling is largely scripted.
Well, I think if you listen to Roberto Mancini and Kenny Dalglish, so is professional football.
This is true. This is true. That is a very good point. Touché on that one. So last week, our Times colleague, Gabby Logan, she presented a documentary talking about some of the issues facing women in football. And it was pretty much across the board, obviously, her role where, you know, she's been a presenter. Others, there's women in press offices, there's women coaches, there's women administrators. And of course, there's women officials as well. And the issue of sexism. Now, when talking about this with our producer, Chris Skinner, I kind of made the point that, all right, we want to talk about this, but I don't want to, like, sort of tokenize this. And I thought it was important that if we did it, we would have more than one woman on, because what really bugs me, and the media in every country in the world do this, so please don't make this be a pig in the English media, but it's like, oh, look, there's an issue with black people. Oh, let's call Darren Lewis, or let's call black journalist and speak for the entire black population in the world. And so, unfortunately, Allison decided that going on holiday with her family was more important than spending her Monday morning podcast with us. So we got Joe on, who, of course, appeared in that documentary. I just wanted to state that for the record. Joe, we don't expect you to speak for all of womankind or all of womankind football or all of Spurs supporting womankind in football or all of injured marathon running Spurs supporting womankind in football, anything like that. Rory, you can feel free to speak for all of...
I speak for men.
For men, exactly. Yeah. Hard Yorkshireman. Man, one of the things that strikes me off the bat is certainly on the journalism side, I had a total lack of awareness of women football journalists in the sense that it didn't ever occur to me in media-wise who was who. Like, they were just kind of colleagues. But I have been very aware that on the other side, on the club side, certainly in press offices and things like that, women seem to be very well represented. Is there a different dynamic there?
I think that traditionally communications and public relations have been had more females working in them, so that might be one reason. But I also have to say on the journalistic front, in the sort of 10, 15 years I've been working in football industry newspapers, there are definitely far more women working in the game than there used to be on both sides. So I'm not saying we should be complacent and think everything's fine, but I think we should also recognise that progress has been made, and certain people have been able to use sort of, use their gender as an advantage if you're looking enough to get the right opportunities and work hard and sort of take your breaks, really. And it's obviously good. I'm sure Rory you'd agree, but there's nothing, it's actually very, very refreshing to have a sort of greater depth and diversity in the press box rather than being surrounded by lots of bitter and twisted middle-aged men.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I think that I'd much rather, I mean, I'm kind of with Gab, I don't really, it doesn't really occur to me that people, that when it's a woman in the press box particularly, there aren't very many. There's probably more, I guess, than there used to be. There's certainly not as many as there are on the other sides of newspapers. You look at in a newspaper features department or a news reporting department, it's probably not far off 50-50. Maybe not quite 50-50, but in sport, it tends to be one or two per paper. But I'd much rather have a woman, I guess a young woman who sort of is familiar with the modern game and is...
But not a middle-aged woman.
No, I think gender and age are both equally important, but I'd rather have someone who is au fait with the modern game than a 60-year-old man who seems to be out of touch with everything that's going on.
Joe, I purposely asked, I wanted to get the initial view from the boys out there first, but I wanted to ask you about this. What was the thing when you were asked to participate in this documentary? And I thought off the top of my head of like several high-profile women who in football and the media who did not participate. And obviously, I know Gabby wasn't going to go speak to everybody, but she certainly did shoehorn a whole bunch of people into the program who, may or may not have been there, like Robbie Savage and Mark Chapman. And, she included the funny bits, like where she's walking and her umbrella blows away with Jackie Oatley. Do you think, were there some people who purposely, do you think, didn't want to be on this program and other people who felt that it was important to speak out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. There was lots of people. I mean, Robbie actually said when Gabby asked him the question about the Keys and Gray situation, and you saw how uncomfortable he was, and even now, I feel the atmosphere's changed because you're all slightly conscious of what you're saying and you don't want to say the wrong thing. And, I mean, Robbie said on the programme last week, oh, good question, Gabby. Oh, see, I feel uncomfortable now. And it's just people are so worried about saying the wrong thing. And I don't think you can say the wrong thing. It's just, let's discuss this. We've never discussed it. I mean, I've been involved in this Women in Football Committee for 4 years now. It's actually been going 6 years. And it's always been very under the radar because we didn't ever want to be perceived as a group of, oh, you poor, hard done by women. You want to work in football, but you have such a hard life and it's so difficult for you. Walk in a press box and people look you up and down and managers speak to you, in a derogative manner, and all players sometimes don't give you the respect you deserve, and oh, poor old us. That's absolutely how we didn't want to come across. So that's why we've always been very under the radar. But then when incidents like the Sean Massey thing and the Keys and Gray thing happen, you do
sort of... It was the same incident, by the way.
Yeah. But it was, there was other Keys and Gray quotes that came out off the back of the Sean Massey incident, which were very indicative of things that we've all heard in the workplace. And I think when that happened, we then felt a responsibility to sort of, have a voice. If something happens, if there's a racist incident or a homophobic incident, immediately Kick It Out will be putting out a statement or, making a statement or putting someone up for interview. And we've never really had that. And I just think for women, sort of, I'm of an age now, I've worked in the media for 13 years, but when I started out, if something had happened to me and, various you know, small things happen when you're working your way up through the ranks. I had no idea who to speak to about it without seeming like I was running and going, oh, this happened to me and this is horrible. You know, who do you go to? And we asked various people in the documentary, if there was an incident of sexism in the workplace, who would you go to? And nobody knew, because, you know, do you go to the FA? Well, when we went to the FA 6 years ago and said we'd like to set up this group for you know, women in football and networking and support group, the FA came back and said, we feel very uncomfortable with that. Why do you feel uncomfortable?
Here's a dumb question, right? But if you're employed by a football club and you experience an episode of sexism in the workplace, presumably there's a human resources department and any kind of mechanism like that that you would go to. And while obviously, you know, there'd be concerns with losing your job and protections and so on, would it be that different than if you were working in a bank or in a, you know,
no, I presume, I've never worked for a football club, but I presume they do have HR. However, the issue then becomes, if you kick up a fuss, you'll probably never work in football again, and you probably won't. I mean, I said to Gabby about, you know,
but people say that, right? But we both know somebody who was on that program, and I don't know how much we're going to go out, but who was let go by her football club and kicked up a tremendous fuss, and depending who you talk to, it's responsibilities all around. But you know, she's working in football now in a high profile position. She certainly made some enemies along the way, but she's also got some supporters.
But she didn't come out. She's never come out publicly and said what happened to her. And within the game, it's very hush hush about what happened. It's not spoken about openly. It's not like in the city. Whereas, if you took a major bank to court because of the way you were treated, you would then speak out against that company. It's not, you know, it's not that open.
Regular listeners will know that I don't particularly admire Karen Brady, the football administrator. I don't like her methods. I don't like her bosses at all. And I also think that in some ways, this idea that you're having, while it's obvious great that there is a successful woman in football, I kind of think that it's also a bit like, you don't want to give off the image that, you know, you to succeed in football, you have to be a little Karen Brady clone, because, you know, let's face it, not everybody, you know, has the stomach to be Karen Brady. Everybody's different personalities. I thought that maybe somebody like Heather Abatz would actually be a much better, you know, an alternative role model. But Karen Brady said something that was 100%. You know, I thought was 100% right on that thing, that if people don't come forward, then they're simply making it more difficult for future generations. And I kind of got the impression that that wasn't necessarily made as clear. Lots of people, you know, telling stories without mentioning names, especially things that happened 10, 15 years ago. But really, Karen Brady was sort of one of the most forceful ones coming out and saying, like, hey, if you don't speak up, you're not just hurting yourself, you're hurting the future, too.
But they've never had anywhere to come forward to, apart from your HR department. How did anyone ever know? I mean, Women in Football has been a very small network group, and we haven't reached out to, you know, nearly half the people we need to. But even since that program went out, I could name you another five stories of incidents that we are looking into, right, at the moment, things that have happened.
Right, but this Women in Football Networks is around now. I mean, I just wonder, some of those women who've been very successful, I mean, you're shaking your head, Rory.
I'm shaking my head, it's Jenna Coffin.
Okay, there you go. But not a single name was named. I just get the sense that, you know, believe it or not, I am not a victim of sexism and never will be.
I refuse to accept that.
Exactly. But, you know, I've got two little girls, and I don't want them to go into a world where, you know, women have to overcome these hurdles or they have to be sort of Karen Brady superwomen to go and make it. So this is an issue for me, and so I have a stake in this, and I want people to come out and tell stories when they do happen. And I'm not entirely comfortable either with all the seeking FA approval thing.
I don't think we're seeking FA approval. I think initially we thought that it would be the right thing to do to go to, as the body of our national game, the right thing to do would be to go to the FA and say, do you want to be part of this group? And they said no at the first instant. Okay, fine, that's fine. We'll just do our own small support group. Now, as the years have gone on and we've realised it's not just people on the committee that have experienced sexism, it's women in general in the game. And as I said to you, it's, you know, literally has grown and grown even in the last week since that programme. The number of incidents that I've heard about in the last 5 days have been ridiculous, and hence why we've got our meeting tomorrow to discuss those incidents and what we're going to do about that and what support we can give to the women that have suffered those. Now, what the next step is thereafter, I'm not sure, but that's something that we're going to work through, because I agree with you, if there are incidents going on, we need to be discussing them and people need to be named.
I want to throw one other thing out, which I'm really in two minds about this, okay? When, apart from the fact, obviously, Jackie Oatley has a woman's voice, and, you know, it's not, and admittedly, I wouldn't call it screechy, but it's not, you know, not exactly Lauren Bacall either. Somebody made the point that, well, you know, yeah, Jackie Oatley's very competent, whatever, but she sounds just like the other Match of the Day reporters in terms of what she says. She doesn't add anything feminine to it. And I thought, this is actually kind of brutal, because I thought, is she supposed to add something feminine?
Why should she add something feminine?
Exactly.
Of course she should be like every other Match of the Day commentator.
What would be feminine?
What would you want?
Like referring to a rom-com?
Well, no, but the...
A gentle build-up to a goal?
It's so unlucky. What it's meant to do.
That's more effeminate than feminine, actually.
Where's this quote come from?
That's what?
Where's this quote come from?
Oh, I think it was I think I read it in The Independent at the time. But I think other people have talked about, for example, very broadly speaking, women being better problem solvers, more diplomatic, very, you know, and this idea that she would bring a female perspective. And I actually thought it was kind of offensive to me.
I find that completely offensive. Why should she bring something feminine? She's just bringing her view. She's just bringing Jackie in the same way that Jonathan Pearce brings.
I wouldn't say they bring their view, because they're Match of the Day commentators.
But you're bringing your unique style.
You probably get robots to do it.
Fine. But see, look at Motti. He has a unique style.
It's because he's old and he
can't see the map.
Yeah, but it's unique.
Yeah,
it's unique.
I don't know. We don't want to stick with a Match of the Day. Well, just to establish my credentials, I spent most of Saturday in the company of the England and Arsenal ladies captain, Faye White. Is Faye okay?
Yeah.
Sorry. I just got an approving nod from Faye. If you're listening to this, Joe Tung says you're okay. Okay. So that's good. I'm sure you just made her day there, Joe. All right, time now for some quick hits. And hey, let's get this straight out of the way. It's our weekly Liverpool underachieving bit. They're held to a 1-1 draw by Aston Villa. Rory, Kenny Dalglish, playing Michael Oliver, and maybe he was right. I thought he's been pretty good this year, but certainly not this past week. Is Kenny kind of grasping at straws?
I was in the main stand at Anfield on Saturday, not working, just watching. And then I watched Match of the Day afterwards. And the difference is incredible. Match of the Day made Liverpool look competent, attacking, full of verve and panache. They weren't. They were abysmal for 70 minutes. There are no tactics. It was nothing to do with Michael Oliver. Liverpool is a very poor football team. Michael Oliver is a good referee. Kenny is grasping at straws.
All right, careful there. You want the Tonys to hear that. West Brom win 3-0 at Bolton. So much for Owen Coyle's resurgence. But Roy Hodgson suggests he'd like a new contract with a get-out clause in case he gets the England job. Matt, should he bother?
Yeah, I think he should, because there are a lot of people in the FA who would like to give Roy Hodgson the job. I don't think they will. I think they'll be swayed by the popular sentiment in favour of Harry Redknapp, but it's by no means guaranteed that Spurs will let them do the deal. So if Roy is in the running, he should keep his options open.
Yeah, well, we know you're not an England fan, but who would your pick be, Roy or Harry? Okay, you don't have to answer that. I know, it's cruel. Spurs are held at Sunderland while Chelsea and Newcastle take a step closer. Joe, are Spurs fans worried? 1-7 in the Premier League? What's the problem? ¿Qué pasa?
Well, can I blame the FA for this one as well?
Of course.
Let's blame the FA. Harry Redknapp, England job chat. I mean, as a Spurs fan, I don't think any Spurs fans are worried or surprised. This is what happens to Spurs. You know, you get to Christmas and it's all going very well, and you get to January and your season just tails off. This is not a surprise to me. My thing on this is, what happens if Newcastle finish above Spurs? Does Alan Pardew get the England job?
No, because Alan Pardew's not Harry, and Alan Pardew's
English
already
manager.
Ruled himself out.
English manager.
And this constant defeatism, you know, I think your grandparents who survived the Blitz would be rather embarrassed by this. Papi Cissé scores again as Newcastle win at Swansea. It's now 9 goals in 8 games for the striker, who cost £9 million in January. Rory, the guy scored 22 goals last year in the Bundesliga, not in some weirdo, obscure South American league like the ones you fetishize. Why did nobody but Alan Pardew show any interest at that price?
Do you know what? I'm a massive fan of Graham Carr, the work that he's done. I think that he's brought two players in particular to Newcastle who've been superb in Kabay and Cheick Tiote. They were brilliant bits of scouting. Kabay was the captain of the French champions, so that's maybe not that hard. Papi Cissé was the second leading scorer in the Bundesliga, I think, last season, and was either second again or top when he moved to Newcastle. That's not a brilliant bit of scouting. That's watching European football, and to be honest, I don't think there's enough people in England doing that.
Why is nobody else again?
All I've no
people,
idea.
There's no good bargains in January. Oh, you take a gamble.
The one thing I would say is I'm
a bit freaking life.
I'm a bit surprised that no one, in terms of Munich or someone like, or Dortmund, I guess, but they probably don't need him. None of the German sides picked him up. He was at Freiburg, who aren't a big club. But no, I think in terms of lionising Carr for spotting him, it's not really relevant. He was astounding in Germany.
Okay, you're lavishing a bit too much praise on Graham Carr. Roberto Martinez called the blown offside call that led to Wigan's 2-1 defeat at Chelsea, quote, disgusting. Matt, it certainly was a bad mistake, but should Martinez now be punished for daring to speak his mind, or should it be okay to say that without alleging anything bad, it was a disgustingly bad decision?
No, he shouldn't punish at all, and I get a bit frustrated when people like us in the media kind of criticise managers for being honest and open and speaking candidly, which is surely what we want them to do. There's a difference between saying what you think and blowing out lots of ridiculous conspiracy theories about referees being biased and favouring certain teams in the manner that people like Neil Warnock have done for years. Martinez got it spot on because English is his second language. He used a colourful word that maybe an English manager wouldn't have done, but no one would disagree with him, and he should be fine.
All right, go on, Roberto. Grant Holt has scored 13 league goals this year. Only Wayne Rooney has more among English strikers, except for Ricky Lambert, but I guess that's in the championship. Joe, would you take him to the Euros, as his mate Anthony Pilkington keeps advocating on Twitter?
No. And I know Mark Lawrenson got a lot of grief for saying this on Match of the Day. Absolutely not. If you're going to take if we're talking strikers, give me Crouchy, give me Defoe, give me Daniel Sturridge. Why isn't Daniel Sturridge being spoken about?
He probably will be going to the Euros.
But why are we talking about, if we're talking about form, I think Kevin Phillips has scored 7. What's Grant Holt scored? 15? This season?
13.
Right. Well, Kevin Phillips has scored 17. You've got David Nugent scored 15. If you're talking about form, Ricky Lambert can score penalties.
You don't buy the argument that England need to bring one striker who's not small, who's like big and an aerial threat?
Crouchy.
No love for Andy Carroll, eh?
Gab, one for you. Of the 8 teams still playing European football, 5 of them are Spanish. What gives? I thought it was Scotland with Sun and the other 18 clubs were all rubbish.
No, you didn't. I just scripted that for you, Rory, but that's okay. I think the reality is that even though Spain is a very unbalanced league, the top 2 sides really are that good. They are ridiculously good. They're 2 of the best teams in history. One is the most expensive team ever assembled with the highest paid manager ever. And so, by extension, the other teams, yeah, they're way behind, but they're really not that bad. I think there's still major issues with La Liga, and there are issues that are going to need to be resolved. But I think the quality is clearly there. Also, Bilbao, with all the love in the world for Bielsa, this is a very erratic team. It's very much a cup side. But I think we should think twice before going and then maybe actually watch some of these teams play before going and passing judgment on them. That's all we've got time for this week. But remember, you can go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis, our web chats. No web chat for me this week. I'm going on holiday. Also, we're all on Twitter. Joe, you're on Twitter too, right?
Tongue Tweets.
Tongue Tweets, at Tongue Tweets, and you can follow Joe, and maybe Joe will provide some updates on the whiff stuff we talked about as well. Rory, of course, is on there. You all follow him already, so I need to give you his Twitter handle. Enjoy the week. Plenty going on. Until next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.